We're ready, thank you.
I guess to start, I'd like to reserve 3 minutes.
3 minutes, yes ma'am.
May it please the court, I'm Shelley James, and I'm here representing Mr. Williams in this appeal of his conviction of attempted murder and use of a firearm in commission of a felony. We've raised two sufficiency issues on appeal, the first being basically agent, and the second being specific intent. I'll start with agent. In this case, my client clearly was misbehaving. He was running around half naked in the backwoods of Harrison.
Rockingham County to be.
I live in Augusta County, which is a much more civilized place.
Wow.
He was running around half naked, shooting off a gun, scaring his neighbors. So of course,
but he's apparently the only person in the area shooting off guns. And you know, I gather your argument focuses on the fact that he then runs off into some woods, and gunshots come out of the woods, basically, the Commonwealth hasn't excluded the possibility that someone else is firing shots at the sheriff's deputies.
That's exactly it, Your Honor. There is evidence that the police found, which was, of course, then presented not in their case in chief.
These hypotheses of innocence, though, have to flow from the evidence. So what point to the evidence that indicates that somebody else is firing the shots?
All of the shells that were found all over the ground. That testimony is presented by Investigator Brown in the appendix at 291.
He's also pointing the gun at people as he's riding along. And
he has pointed the gun at one person, not a police officer. He has not shot the gun at anyone. No one throughout this whole incident saw him point a gun and shoot it at any individual. That is not anywhere.
I guess it seems to me it comes really down as a matter of law. Why is it incorrect or improper for a fact finder to reasonably infer, when you have one person who's waving a gun around, one person who's pointing the gun at individuals and basically acting in a very threatening way, and then gunshots are eventually fired from a location where this individual was last seen, why it would be insufficient as a matter of law to conclude that he is the criminal agent?
Because it has to be proven beyond a reasonable doubt, Your Honor. It's not just an inference. And I know the Commonwealth wants to point to the fact that there are a couple of Supreme Court cases that talk about if there are hypotheses of innocence, and that it can't just be any old hypotheses of innocence. But those Supreme Court cases emphasize the other thing that tends to get forgotten in appellate cases, is that the standard of proof for the trial court is beyond a reasonable doubt. And so you are supposed to be reviewing this to determine if the evidence is sufficient to prove him guilty beyond a reasonable doubt, even if you take some of those inferences into account. That's the point that the Supreme Court was making in those cases. Not that if there are hypotheses of innocence that flow from the evidence, Your Honors, or the trial court, the fact finder, can disregard those. And so I have a different.
What about the witnesses with the folks that I can't remember if it's the Hufflins or the Deans, but a family that lives on the same road testified that they observed him ride his horse out of the woods, fire four or more shots, and then go back into the woods. So he's firing the gun clearly, and you know, why isn't it enough then to establish that he's the only one firing the gun, essentially?
Your Honor, because there are other casings in the woods, because there is testimony that people are frequently shooting firearms in this area.
All the casings mentioned are .22 caliber, aren't they?
Yes, I believe so, Your Honor. And there's different testimony about.
They may come from different manufacturers, but they all can be fired from the same gun.
Yeah, there was no gun recovered here. There's nothing. There's no bullet pulled out of a tree. There's nothing. Nobody knows what firearm he was shooting. Nobody knows what caliber firearm he was shooting.
But after the shooting, there were 22 caliber shells seen in a very
in various
variety
areas
of places
around where this shooting allegedly happened. I mean, the shooting did happen. We know that. I'm not. So there's evidence of shooting all over the area. There are, Mr. Huffman said that there's frequent shooting in the area. And actually, if you read the testimony of Deputy Pultz, who's the person who was shot at in this case, allegedly, he says on page 230 that he heard a shot in the distance, which would indicate that it was not the defendant shooting. So somebody else is shooting in this area. Because if that shot was in the distance and Mr. Williams is the only person shooting in the area, then how did he get from that distance back to Deputy Pultz in such a short amount of time? All of this happened in a very short amount of time.
Isn't the answer fast horse?
Well, but maybe he's on a horse, maybe he's walking. That kind of leads to my third point, is that if you take the testimony of the officers here, there might have been two or even three people running around in the woods that day, because Investigator Morris at one point thinks there's somebody in a red shirt, which clearly, if you look at the pictures, my client is very heavily tattooed. I guess you maybe could have thought he's wearing a shirt, but certainly not a red one. And while there is some testimony that Officer Morris wasn't sure about a red shirt, I think the testimony was he wasn't quite sure about the color, but he thought that he saw someone in a shirt running around through the woods too. There was also testimony, again from Investigator Morris, that the person he saw was walking, and that's on page 192. And then when you get to Deputy Pultz, he seems to say that the person is riding a horse again. And how that could happen in a minute or two from when...
I mean, we got a desperado on horseback, you know, cranking off rounds. We got pointing the gun at passersby. We got a sheriff's posse. The only thing missing here is a school marm. And we got a plot for gun smoke.
Actually, one of the witnesses was a teacher.
Okay, so there you go. So we're all set.
So I understand Your Honor's issues with that. I believe that the second issue we've raised, the one of specific intent, is probably the one on which there is even less evidence when you look at the Commonwealth's case, even in the light most favorable to the Commonwealth. Even the jury had questions about that. If you look at the appendix on pages 2 and 3, the jury questions even indicate that they weren't sure that anybody shot at the officer. The first question was, can we convict him of something if he didn't? And of course, the judge didn't give the jury any guidance on this. The fact that even in the instruction sentencing my client, it's clear the jury was not happy that they had to sentence him to 20 years, because they basically say, because we have to under these instructions, are we sentencing him to 20 years? Clearly, they thought something was not right here. As far as specific intent goes, it is again the same standard. Commonwealth, of course, has to prove beyond a reasonable doubt. You would take the inferences from the evidence, but there has to be evidence to support those inferences, and then it must prove beyond a reasonable doubt. If there is evidence that supports another hypothesis, then it cannot be proof beyond a reasonable doubt, because there is still doubt. And in this case, there is lots of room for doubt, and specifically given this is an attempted murder case, because the Commonwealth actually has a heavier burden than if they had charged my client with murder, which, because the officer wasn't even hit, they could not do. But if it's a murder case, the specific intent is not quite so harsh. Here, the Commonwealth needed specifically to prove that my client acted willfully, deliberately, premeditatively, with the intent to kill Deputy Pultz. And that is not proven beyond a reasonable doubt. not even looking at the evidence in the light most favorable to the Commonwealth. First, usually the Commonwealth points to the words that somebody says, usually words that are said in anger. In this case, there's no words. The only words that have ever come out of my client's mouth are supposedly, get out of here and don't hurt my dogs. Get out of here is something people say all the time without intending to kill anyone. Children say it to each other, parents say it to each other, people say it to each other. There's no get out of here or I'm going to kill you, then maybe there would be a threat. But he did not say that. So there are no words of a threat here. Secondly, the deputy was not shot. And while the Commonwealth wants to point to the age-old case law that a person intends the natural consequences of their acts, the natural consequences here are that the deputy was not shot.
Though he heard bullets whizzing in the treetop over him and something caused the ground stone or something from near his feet to...
Right. We don't know what caused that. And, you know, the deputy testified that he thought the rustling was caused by shots in the tree overhead, which was an oak tree, not a short tree, which is what the Commonwealth tried to lead the officer into saying, but the officer testified that it was a lush oak tree overhead, not some short little thing right above his head, as the Commonwealth would have you believe. And either way, the natural consequences of the consequence of what happened here was that no one was injured. So if the Commonwealth wants to say that he intends the natural consequences of his act, the natural consequences of his act here was that no one was hurt. Therefore, his intention was not to hurt anyone. And the point about the oak tree is on page 235 of Deputy Pulse's testimony. He also testified that the rock really just kind of left a little bit of dirt on his pants leg and maybe a little bit of a red mark. No one knew where this rock came from, this is a rocky area, it's a rutted road. It could have come from yards away from the officer and been kicked up. We don't know. And if he was on horseback, who knows, the horse's hooves might have knocked it up. In addition, no one saw the defendant take aim at the police officer. So there's no intention from that. While it might have been in his general direction, this guy was shooting off firearm all over everywhere. The evidence was he's basically riding around, almost falling off his horse, shooting a gun. So every time he's seen shooting a gun, it's clearly with no intention to harm anyone or to aim at anything.
You're within your... rebuttal, I just pointed out, you're free to continue if you
wish. Thank you, Your Honor. I would also say that there's no evidence that he was ever seen shooting at any person, that he didn't make any additional attempts after he missed the officer, which would bring the Haywood case particularly on point. I'll reserve the rest for my rebuttal.
Mr. Murphy?
Good afternoon, Your Honor. May I please the court, Jim Murphy for the Commonwealth. I think on the first issue, it's clear that we fully established this man's identity. Probably most obviously was that Deputy Poltz had seen and talked to this man sometime, they talked to the dog and other things, and then just before the shots come in, he hears the same voice, identifies the same voice he's heard, and saying, get out of here. So it seems to me that that voice identification is sufficient to tie into all the other things we know about. The absence of any true proof of somebody else running around doing this, like the defendant. Investigator Morris said he saw somebody, a white male with no shirt, coming towards the Poltz. So here we've got the defendant again, the man without a shirt running around in the woods. It comes at Poltz, and before he attacks him, he says, get out of here, in the voice of the man he knows and has met as the defendant. So I think it's clear on the identity. that there's no question in this case. This was the defendant. Holt said it was the same man, and that should be sufficient to establish that issue. Now, on the intent, first of all, of course, words are not necessary. Many times we have intent crimes where there's a threat, but the threat is unspoken, and just the actions occur. And of course, it is important to keep in mind that one does intend the natural consequences of one's actions. But that principle doesn't fall by the wayside when the defendant fails to achieve those results. I mean, the mere fact that the deputy was not shot does not mean that the defendant did not intend to shoot him. Then, in fact, the question is, what else is there present to indicate this intent to kill? Now, what we have is a man who's obviously drunk. He's annoyed. As part of the early on events, he charges the cruiser on his horse and then backs off. So it seems to me we've got somebody who's angry, he's upset, he is clearly intoxicated. And what he does next, before the shooting happens, he says, get out of here. And then he starts shooting before the officer can do anything. It's not as if, get out of here or else I'll come after you, and the officer doesn't go. He yells, get out of here, and then starts shooting. So he's not really hoping the officer will leave. He's going to yell at him. And just, it seems to be clear, this is an angry individual who's upset with the police. What we then have is the fact that a number of shots go by him. And he did say that the shots went by him as if rocks were whizzing by my head. So I think it's clear that gunshots were going by him close to his head. One shot, I think it's reasonable inference too that the rock was kicked up by another bullet. And in fact, there were several shots, four or five shots at this point. One of them hit the ground, kicked up at the stones. Several of them went right by his head. And so that, in fact, Holt said on his radio to his fellow police officers, somebody is shooting at me, you're shooting in my direction. At that point, he perceived himself as being shot at. So again, there's no question the defendant was shooting in the direction of the victim. And obviously, one doing that would ordinarily be intended to hit the officer, which in fact would have caused his death if he struck him in the head. Now, in many of the other cases, there's another explanation for the defendant's behavior. In both Haywood and Baldwin, there was an explanation that he was trying to escape. The difference here is, first of all, there's no testimony from the defendant. In both of those cases, the defendant got on the stand and said, I was just trying to get out. You may remember, these are cases both involved automobiles where the defendant drives at the police and avoids them. But it was obvious that a fact finder could determine that he just wanted to get away. But we don't have any evidence of that here. And in fact, the defendant didn't have to shoot the police to get away. After firing at this officer, he just left and got away without any hindrance from the officers. In fact, showed up in Harrisonburg the next day. So we have a situation where there's no evidence that he had any other intent than expressing his anger at the police by shooting at this officer and shooting closely at his head. And I think that the mere fact that he missed doesn't relieve him of his guilt for what was appears to me a reasonable conclusion that he was intending to kill this officer. And unless there are any there are questions from the court, I rest on that presentation of the facts in this case.
Very well. Thank you very much, sir. Ms. Gaines, your rebuttal time.
Your Honors, I must say I find it a little odd to hear coming out of the Attorney General's mouth evidence that a defendant testified and Your Honors should believe him. Because that's exactly what the Commonwealth is saying. Usually, they say, and the case law certainly allows them to say it, that in a case when a defendant testifies, you should take what he says as absolutely untrue and give it no credibility and actually use it as evidence against him. So I'm not sure why.
I think the point is that we take the evidence the light most favorable to the Commonwealth since they prevail below, no matter where it came from.
Well, but the case that the Commonwealth points to, that's not what happened. there was evidence by the by Haywood that he was trying to get away. And in this case, all you have as far as statements from my client is, get out of here. The Commonwealth wants to say that means that he's angry, upset, and wants him out of there to the point where he's willing to kill him. That is not a reasonable inference. That is wholesale speculation. When somebody says, get out of here, that means you want them to leave. And if he shot a gun at him then, the reasonable inference would be that he wanted to scare him off, not to hit him, not to kill him, that he wanted him to go away. When he charged the officer's police cruiser, he didn't run over the cruiser, he didn't try to shoot the officer then, he turned his horse around, went away. There's nothing that indicates he was at a level of anger with the police officers that he would have had any intent to kill them. The officers haven't done anything to him at this point. He got away from the officers. He was out there having a good time, riding his horse, drunk, shooting off his gun. And nobody was stopping him. When he actually had a confrontation with the officer, all he was concerned about was whether the officers were going to hurt his dogs or not. And so the evidence here, if you look at it in the light most favorable to the Commonwealth, being reasonable, is not that my client intended, had the specific intent to kill the officer. Perhaps he shot. Perhaps he even shot in the direction of the officer, which is not clear given the officer had moved from the last time he had any interaction with Mr. Williams. But it's clear that the evidence is not sufficient to prove that he had the specific intent to kill unless you just create some inferences that are beyond reasonable and ignore the actual evidence in the case.
If he shot at the officer, why wouldn't you be able to draw that inference?
If there was evidence that he aimed at the officer?
No, if you shoot at somebody.
We don't know where he was shooting in this case, Your Honor. We don't know if he was shooting into the trees. We don't know if he was shooting into the ground. We don't know if he thought he was shooting in the other direction, and everybody testified he was a great horseman, but he couldn't keep a seat this time. The horse missteps and his shot goes wild. We don't know how those bullets ended up going towards the deputy. We don't know that
the only way the bullet could go toward the deputy would be it was aimed in that direction.
It would be that the gun was
pointed in that direction. There's no other way it can go.
Aiming suggests there's some sort of intent that it go in that direction. And in order to prove the specific intent that he intended to murder the officer, there's got to be evidence that my client intended that bullet to go through that officer. And so he had to specifically intend.
That's pointed in a certain direction, and at the other end of that direction is a police officer. Isn't it a fair inference that you intended to do just what you did?
If you specifically point it at the officer, I think that might be a fair inference, but there is no evidence in this case that he did that. There's no evidence that he even knew the officer was there, because when he talked to him earlier, he was at the other side of the car. For all Mr. Williams knew, the officer was nowhere near where those bullets were going, if he had any clue as to where those bullets were going. And there's no evidence that he had any idea where those were going. That nobody saw him point the gun. Nobody saw how the gun got fired. It's all speculation. It's not even inference. It's speculation. Thank you.
Thank you. We'll step down and greet counsel and then take up the case of Duggan versus the Commonwealth.